This is called Showing Up for Friends. It's written by Reverend Teresa Ines Soto. After the grief and the loss, the women showed up bearing a gift for their dead friend that would not be repaid. The gift I can bring to my friend is showing up. When they appear over and over, alive in the most unlikely of ways, I can show up and tell the story of life unlikely in the face of no agreement. And where death persists, life continues undeterred. Let us speak of that. Of the showing up when grief is thick on our shoulders like a wool coat. And when there's no sign that life, much less joy, may yet return. Because where two of us, or three, let's say, stop to think of our friend, to rest in their love, there they will, celebrating the unlikeliest of loves, show up. The way that we show up for one another through grief is one of the most tender and beautiful parts of belonging to a church. I've been reminded of this so many times here in big and small moments. Last month, during the program council meeting, Alice O'Trainer, one of our pastoral associates, took the opportunity of our gathering to address a representative from the knitting ministry. Did you know we have a knitting ministry? They are a small group of knitters who gather and knit together, making prayer shawls. They keep a stock of them downstairs. And our pastoral associates come to church and retrieve a prayer shawl when it's needed. They bring them along during home or hospital visits. What I witnessed at this gathering last month was Alice expressing the most heartfelt gratitude to this quiet group of knitters. "I wish you could come along sometime," she said, "to see how deeply meaningful these moments are when we offer this comfort to people who are hurting so profoundly. It is such a gift." Sally Hirschberg stopped into my office last week. She and I share a love for children's stories and the power that they have to change us. She saw a copy of the story I was preparing to share today, and as we were talking about children and grief, she told me about a moment that she had recently shared with a man who was working on the gutters at her house. The man had a British accent, and Sally had asked him when he had moved to the States. And he shared that he had moved here 2 years ago with his 2-year-old child after his wife died. Sally asked him if he had done anything to help his child navigate grief, and he told her no. Their conversation led to Sally sharing a variety of books and tools she has for the purpose of restorative grief work with children. See, he didn't know, but Sally has spent years working with children in navigating grief. The man returned to her a week later to express how transformative her suggestions had already been for his now 4-year-old child. He didn't know his daughter needed an opportunity to talk. He didn't know until he happened into this particular conversation with this particular person. Who is to say how these small expressions of care impact our world? I marvel at the power of it. We learn from each other in the sharing. We're reminded of how complicated it can be to navigate different needs around death. We're comforted when we hear our experiences reflected in how others choose to grieve. Sometimes in the hardest moments, we close ourselves off for a time. Sometimes we struggle with anger. People die with things left unsaid or things left messy. And we're left puzzling at how to move forward. Sometimes we laugh when we're expected to cry. Sometimes we sing in celebration while others ask for quiet. It's complicated and raw. This process of living through death, but less so because we have each other's company. 4 days before my 18th birthday, I was in a dorm room in college when a friend came to tell me I had a phone call. This was still the days of hallway payphones shared between building occupants, when if you talked too long to your friends, you got dirty looks from the other kids in the dorm. I had just returned from a 4-day winter camping expedition. I was fresh from the shower, warm and tired and energized all at once. Winter break was around the corner, and the newness of my first year of college had been replaced by the deep friendships that form when you depend on other people for a bowl of ashy mac and cheese, or a hand to get up an icy slope, or a body to sleep close to for warmth. I remember bounding down the half flight of stairs to the tiny cell phone, to the tiny phone closet, and gleefully greeting my dear friend Lulu on the other end of the phone. I remember how happy I was. I remember her sharing the impossible news that Galen had been killed. Then I was angry at her that she would say such a thing. I remember actually telling her how awful she was for uttering those words. I remember the feeling as I began to realize that she wasn't joking. I was standing, and then I had melted to the floor. Put these here on purpose. For several days, and then I was in Cambridge. I was in Lulu's parents' townhouse. Everyone was in Cambridge and Lulu's parents' townhouse. Friends came from all over so we could be together to grapple with this fissure in our precious circle. For several days, this house was filled with grieving teenagers, learning what to do with the feelings that come when someone you love has died, has been taken from you unexpectedly. One moment shattered our invisible force field of adolescence in a devastating way, but we were really brilliant at grieving. There was a fluidness to the days and weeks and months that followed. We were in that time of life when tending to our own needs was second nature. And we were in that time of life when our friends were perfect. So we gave one another permission to do whatever we had to do, and we supported one another in the doing. We slept when we chose to sleep, and ate when we chose to eat, and showered or didn't, and smoked and cried and laughed and screamed and mourned and laughed and celebrated and pulled one another so close as if we were trying to ensure that we would never lose another part of our whole. Those were the days that taught me how to grieve and to mourn and to remember. My friends were essential in that healing, as was Galen's family, who welcomed us all into their own grief, who still keep photos of him on their walls and tell stories about him and keep him real in a world that sometimes feels like it tries to erase our losses. Together, we have all kept Galen with us year after year. I've never stopped feeling sad that he and I won't make more memories together, but I'm so grateful for the memories I have and the people with whom I can share those stories. There is a kind of grace that becomes a part of this process of living through death, a realization that we must always be ready to let go and to hold on. I flew to Taos, New Mexico last August to help lead a memorial for another beloved friend from college. He and I had been roommates for many years, but it was many years ago. He and I kept in touch, but so many of the connections we shared back when we lived together in Albuquerque had faded from my memory. Then his brother called. Then I was standing in his mom's kitchen, catching up with his cousins who I had not seen in 20 years, sharing memories from graduations and random family gatherings at which I had been an honorary guest way back then, squinting to see the old versions of ourselves in these more wrinkled faces, sharing so many stories, learning about this beloved lost friend, son, brother, cousin, lover, in a way that we each hadn't entirely known when he was alive. Each of us shared stories about Jason for one another like a potluck meal. I didn't expect the memorial to feed my heart so deeply. I showed up to be there for his family, but I left with more of Jason than I had when I had arrived. Now, when I think of him, I can picture him riding his motorcycle through the hills of California or building complicated equipment in a lab, even though I had never actually seen him doing either thing when he was alive. Now, when I miss him, I can picture so many faces of other people who loved and miss him too. We have pieces of these ancestors and beloved ones that we can spread and share. We have people who can help us hold the weight. We have guides to emulate. We have each other, even when we're gone. Our community is a million different things on a day like today. We're here holding new grief, deep grief, complicated grief, old familiar grief. There are sweet memories, funny stories, gratitude, regret, longing, melancholy. We add these threads into the fabric of our collective experiences. No matter your particular position, being a part of this place includes this invitation to hold one another through these most raw moments of life, to show up for each other, to remember together. What a gift to share such a thing. What a gift to live. So we're going to skip the closing hymn because we've gone really long today. I'm going to invite Arthur to close with the...
We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our lives until we are together again. You are invited to reach out to your neighbors and join hands or touch elbows for the benediction.
This is a poem written by Gregory Orr. This is what was bequeathed us, this earth the beloved left, and leaving left to us. No other world but this one, willows and the river and the factory with its black smokestacks. No other shore, only this bank on which the living gather. No meaning but what we find here. No purpose but what we make. That and the beloved's clear instructions turn me into song. Sing me awake.